Sure. Good morning. It is November 2nd, 2010, around 10 a.m. This is the North Dakota Public Service Commission meeting at its irregularly scheduled regular biweekly meeting. The meeting usually held on Wednesdays when a couple of reporters will show up, but Dave Thompson, we're glad you're here with us on Tuesday this week. And I guess there must have been some scheduling conflict or reason why we scheduled it for today, or perhaps it was just so that we'd have something to do rather than sit around wringing our hands. Well, at least one of us. Anyway, welcome to everybody who's here and listening online. This is Kevin Kramer along with Tony Clark and Brian Kulk at the Public Service Commission meeting at 10 a.m. With that, any opening comments? Welcome from my commissioners, Commissioner Clark.
Good morning and welcome.
Good morning and welcome here, and I'm excited the big day is finally here. This Friday is opening deer hunting season, so just for the record.
It is a holiday.
I'm a little nervous. I see that Judge Wall is in the audience today.
We have some discussion items on our administrative agenda for the judge. With that, I would move passage of items on the consent agenda.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye. On the regular agenda, agenda item KC1. I move the commission deem the applications complete and issue a notice of filing and notice of hearing in the request of Highland Operating LLC for a waiver of procedures and time schedules, a corridor certificate, and a route permit for the construction of a crude oil pipeline in McKenzie County of North Dakota, case number PU10555.
Second.
You'll recall not so terribly long ago we acknowledged the letter of intent. This is for very short and small pipelines in McKenzie County associated with an existing facility related to gas processing as well as some crude oil. It's 5.1 miles of 8-inch actually crude oil pipeline in McKenzie County. The hearing is scheduled for Friday, December 10th, 2010 at 10 a.m. Central Standard Time at the McKenzie County Courthouse in Watford City. So evidently this hearing is just for the crude oil portion of the pipeline, 5.1 miles and 8-inch. So I do know there are some gas lines as well associated with it. Pardon me?
Natural gas,
right. Yeah, as opposed to gasoline or some other type of gas. But there's a small gas processing facility in that area, I think 50 million cubic feet per day, that's associated with all of that. But at any rate, everything seems to be in order for the hearing.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
KC2. KC2 and 3 are related. They're the next two phases of the Enbridge North Dakota expansion for the, I guess they're calling it now a Bakken line. KC2, I move the commission acknowledge the letter of intent, shorten the one-year waiting period between filing a letter of intent and a siting application to 2 weeks, and assess a filing fee of $100,000 in case number PU10612, Enbridge Pipelines, North Dakota LLC's proposed crude oil pipeline in Ward and Burke Counties, North Dakota.
Second.
As I said, this is the next phase of the expansion of the Enbridge line that is part of the reversal of what I call the portal line. They call it line 26. The first phase being, of course, the expansion of the facilities at Berthold, the city of Berthold. Part of it is authorizes Enbridge to expand their pipeline capacity of the line 26 from 25,000 barrels per day to 145,800 barrels per day. And the way they'll do this is by replacing a certain segment of their existing transmission line and then constructing new associated facilities in Ward and Burke counties. Of course, they're, as always, asking us to waive the one-year waiting period between filing a letter of intent to filing the application. The reason for the request is that they want the project to be in service as soon as possible in order to serve the rising demand for export capacity of crude oil produced in the Williston Basin in both North Dakota and Montana. There'll be filing an application for the corridor certificate and route permit very shortly. The increase of its existing Line 26, which extends northerly from Berthold in Ward County, North Dakota, to the U.S. and Canada border, which is why I call it the portal line, it's referred to hereinafter, they're saying, as the Bakken Pipeline Project U.S. It'll require Enbridge to replace 11 miles of the Line 26 and then install two brand new Greenfield pump stations. One of the pump stations will be near the city of Lignite, the other one near the town of Keniston in Ward County. Lignite, of course, being in Burke County. And that also, of course, includes some modifications to the existing Berthold pump station. It's all part of the project that will add an incremental 120,800 barrels per day. So everything seems to be in order. Now, I will say this. While we are willing, I'm willing today to acknowledge the letter of intent, shorten the one-year waiting period, the application process, and we can handle all of this, but the application process, I cannot guarantee the same expedited treatment. Just after visiting with staff, looking at our workload, frankly, looking at today's agenda, admin agenda, and all the formal hearings that we have got to schedule, while we want to be open, of course, and flexible to the growing demand on both sides of the expansion, we also have to be realistic about our ability to do all of that. And so we'll shorten the one-year waiting period today, anticipate the permit application, and then deal with it as we're able when we receive it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
KC3, I move the commission acknowledge the letter of intent and shorten the one-year waiting period between filing a letter of intent and a siting application to 3 weeks and assess a filing fee of $100,000 in case number PU10613, Enbridge Pipelines, North Dakota LLC's proposed crude oil pipeline in Williams, Montreal, and Ward Counties, North Dakota.
Second.
Same expansion project, of course, but this is, interestingly, this is on the other side of the Berthold station. What this permit would authorize Enbridge to do is expand its existing pipeline system to move, again, an incremental 145,800 barrels per day of Bakken production from Beaver Lodge Station in Williams County to the Berthold Station in Ward County. This they're calling the Beaver Lodge Looping Project, and it does include construction of about 56 miles of new 16-inch diameter pipeline, the installation of new station facilities and tankage at their existing Beaver Lodge, Stanley and Berthold stations and terminal facilities, all being located in Williams, Montreal, and Ward counties. It would run parallel to an existing North Dakota pipeline that Enbridge already owns, beginning at Beaver Lodge Station and terminal facility in Williams County, and then extend in an easterly direction through Montreal County to terminate at the Berthold station. So this basically is getting the Bakken crude to Berthold, where it will then get on the new system. Again, it will provide Bakken shippers with an incremental 145,800 barrels per day of additional pipeline capacity. This takes it up to Cromer, Manitoba, where it then gets on its mainline system, takes Bakken crude to the very familiar Clearwater, Minnesota area and to terminals and processing facilities, refineries in the industrial Midwest. All of this, of course, good news for Bakken producers as we continue to try to help capacity keep up with production and demand on other ends. Although this is familiar demand at the Clearwater area, is nonetheless important for both for pricing as well as meeting the demand and getting the oil out of here, quite frankly, so that we can continue to produce. Everything seems to be in order.
I just want to add one quick comment. There's a thought. We did a pipeline up in Kildare. It was a little bit longer segment, but it removed 300 trucks a day off the road. These pipelines that we're talking about, I mean, we're talking about all this capacity, but it's going to pull a lot of trucks off the roads, and that's the beginning of a long-term solution of impact to the roads in the northwestern part of the state.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That ends in my portfolio. Commissioner Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. TC1, I move the commission issue a notice of hearing regarding Sequoia Energy U.S. Inc.'s revised site plan for its proposed 150-megawatt wind energy conversion facility in Rolette County, North Dakota, case number PU08797.
Second.
We'll be filling in the blank here a little bit later with regard to where and when or when and at what time we'll be holding this. It will be, however, in Rolla at the hopefully the City Commission hearing room. The reason for this, the commission last year had held a hearing on Sequoia Energy's 150-megawatt Border Winds project and had a good hearing in Rolette. There were a number of things that Sequoia needed to follow up with the commission on before getting final approval. They have submitted new plans that have significant changes in the layout of the turbines, and in situations like this in the past, we have, for good reason, just gone back to the county to hold another hearing so that affected landowners have an opportunity to be heard if they have a concern about the new tower locations.
All in favor?
Aye. TC2, I move the commission adopt the order granting certificate in the application of Montana Dakota Utility Company for a certificate of public convenience and necessity to construct approximately 30 miles of 230 kV electric transmission line and associated facilities in Dickey and McIntosh counties of North Dakota, case number PU-10-506.
Second.
MDU has filed this CPCN to construct approximately 30 miles of the 230 kV electric transmission line in Dickey and McIntosh counties. This transmission line is needed for the connection of a new wind farm that is proposed in this area. It's actually the Anexco Development's proposed 150-megawatt Maricourt wind project. Anexco is developing this project in conjunction with NSP or XL Energy, which has also been before this commission on various matters related to the wind farm. The transmission line, though, is one that would be constructed and operated by MDU. It falls within their service territory, and, of course, under FERC rules, they have an obligation to hook up these type of generation facilities. But in so doing, they still have an obligation as a regulated monopoly utility to come before the commission on matters such as this. Basically, what we look at is whether it's in the public's convenience and necessity to, for MDU to construct, own, and operate the facilities, and if they have a fitness, a willingness, and an ability to provide the service. In this case, we just teed this up as an opportunity for hearing, being that MDU is a long-term provider of electricity. We have some familiarity with them, and but nonetheless wanted to provide an opportunity if there's those who wish to contest it. There were no comments received, and so this will approve the CPCN without any further ado.
All in favor?
Aye.
TC3, I move the commission issue an order in case number GE-10-498, canceling warehouse license number 1191 issued to Grabansky Grain, LLC at Grafton, North Dakota, and ordering that business at Grafton, North Dakota is ceased and Grabansky Grain, LLC shall not conduct any further business under license number 1191. This is a little bit of a unique action for the commission to take. Grabansky Grain, you may remember, is one that has filed bankruptcy Chapter 11, and which is a voluntary petition for bankruptcy. And naturally what happens in cases like that is the commission is then barred by federal bankruptcy court from really doing much of anything else until the bankruptcy court gives us a leave to do so. What has happened in this case is another company in Grafton, St. Hilaire Seed Company, has offered to purchase the facility. That, of course, needs to be approved by the bankruptcy court as well. On October 14th, the bankruptcy court entered its order authorizing the sale of assets not in the ordinary course of business, which basically means that St. Hilaire was allowed to purchase it. However, for St. Hilaire to begin operating this facility, the bankruptcy court needed to provide some relief so that the commission could cancel the license that had previously been given to Grabansky Grain, because there can't be two licenses for the same facility. There will not be an attending motion to for St. Hilaire. The reason for that is St. Hilaire currently operates a facility in Grafton, and in situations like that, state law provides that the company, if they maintain their books in a certain manner, is allowed to simply increase their bonding level to reflect the increased storage capacity, but they don't need a separate license for the facility.
All in favor?
Aye. That ends the items in my portfolio.
Again, Commissioner Culp.
Good morning. Item BK1. I move the commission submit the calendar year 2011 one-call grant application in the amount of $10,000, case number GS-10-616.
Second.
Historically, we've submitted a $10,000 request to the Department of Transportation Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration. Basically, that money is used for our call-before-you-dig billboards throughout the state. Typically, we get about 20 billboards, and that is very important to our program. The public awareness is key to our Call Before Your Dig program. We've had national or state digging week and all kinds of things like that. But as the previous motions that Commissioner Kramer had, you can see that we've got more pipelines being built in the state, and it's just critical that we keep awareness on the Call Before You Dig program. Within this last year, Pat and his crew have developed and finalized our damage prevention plan, and actually this year was the first time that we actually held someone in violation for not utilizing Call Before You Dig. So the program is getting stronger and stronger every year. This grant is critical to it, and I think the public awareness is just really what we need right now as we develop all this infrastructure in the ground.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Item BK2, I move the commission file comments regarding the petition of Standing Rock Telecommunication, Inc. for reconsideration of the FCC's August 24, 2010, in WC Docket 09197, requiring state confirmation of a redefinition of West River Telecommunication Cooperative's rural service area, case number PU10574.
Second.
See if I can walk through this this motion. Basically, the North Dakota Public Service Commission resists the September 23, 2010 petition for reconsideration of Standing Rock Telecommunication, Inc., or SRTI, to redefine rural service area. In August 24th of this year, the designation came out basically saying that while we recognize as a state the FCC has authority jurisdiction over ETC status, that the states had the right to be involved in the process of redefining the service area, and specifically in the area of West River Telephone. And this request by Standing Rock basically would go back to the federal level and take us out of that process. And therefore, our comments are we're going to resist that because we feel it's our role to be directly involved in the process, meet with those that we do regulate, such as West River Telephone, and be part of that process. So therefore, we're going to resist their motion to let the FCC decide the future of what's designated what in the state of North Dakota. So the comments are due November 15th at the federal level. We're hopeful that they will hear our side of the story, if you will. And I also believe that others in the state will be filing comments to them in a timely manner.
Yeah, it's basically a matter the FCC got it right the first time, and the law is fairly clear that state commissions have the authority to redefine service territories. It's not really an issue of the commission trying to assert any jurisdiction over the tribe, which we're not, and we don't have authority over the tribe. Rather, it's a matter of the areas that the commission does have jurisdiction over, which is the definition of study areas under the federal act. And so that's what we're focusing in on. The FCC got it right the first time, but we just want to reinforce their logic that they provided.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Item BK3, I move the commission approve the revised tariff for Great Plains Natural Gas Company, Highway 13 Natural Gas Extension, Wapton, North Dakota, case number PU10603.
Second.
Great Plains Natural Gas Company, Great Plains, proposed to extend natural gas services 4 miles west of Wapton to serve 2 interruptible customers and 10 potential firm customers along Highway 13. This proposed tariff is an agreement reached between the two largest customers, Wilrich and Giant Sunflower Seeds, who have committed to the natural gas service immediately. The cost to extend services will be recovered through an upfront cash contribution and a surcharge of 90 cents per million cubic feet until the cost is recovered, which will be approximately 10 years. The project will provide a source of energy to existing residents that is currently not available. An MDU has structured the tariff and advance payment for construction so as to hold existing customers harmless. So basically, if you want to participate in this, you pay a little bit upfront, and then you pay the surcharge of 90 cents per million cubic feet. And so it's just affecting those who are going to be taking services. If anybody wants to join in later, they're welcome to it as long as they comply by the definition of the tariff.
This one really caught my attention because $434,000 to extend natural gas service 4 miles. First of all, I was surprised by the 10 years. And I know that's probably a conservative estimate by the company. At 90 cents per MCF for these two pretty large customers. Wilrich would be a very large customer, but the 4 miles along that gets to Wilrich passes, as I think the memo said, 10 potential firm customers, but it also provides a wonderful 4-mile corridor for potential commercial and industrial development. And I recall when I was director of ED&F, gas availability of gas service in the valley, especially in that Wahpeton area where there's a pretty solid industrial base already, was a major factor in consideration. So my hope is that once this service is in, once the construction is done and it's in service, that it becomes a real good economic development nugget, if you will, to go after some other commercial and industrial development in the Wahpeton area. So hopefully we could shorten that 10-year period quite a bit and make this little $400,000+ investment a very good investment, not just only for the utility, but for the county and the city that I think participated in that upfront cost as well. So good work by all of the folks involved, including the utility and the local developers, as well as certainly the two anchor customers. Very important and good cooperation, so glad to see it.
All in favor?
Aye.
That concludes the items in my portfolio.
Very good. Let's check announcements here. Of course, our next meeting, I think, is back on a Wednesday on the 23rd, or the 24th of November, rather. Between now and then, not a lot of things going on. We have a work session on the NSP gas safety inspection on the 23rd.
Are we skipping a week because of NARUC in there?
NARUC.
Yeah, NARUC. This whole month is a little bit goofy. Of course, we picked that week because that is the week, of course, of Thanksgiving. But
We have the rate case for MDU next week.
Next week's a big week. Next Monday and Tuesday, of course, if all goes as according to plan, we'll be having formal hearings on the MDU rate case on Monday and Tuesday. Other than that,
I would just like to add that the NARUC conference, the Commissioner Clark will become the president of NARUC, so that will be good for the state and good for the commission.
That's as safe a prediction as predicting that John Hoeven will win the U.S. Senate. So if you're looking for out there predictions.
We should announce Mark Grumman, our new attorney.
We haven't done that.
He's Mark, in the back there.
Mark did the work on the Standing Rock documentation and all that ahead of time, so he's already participating.
Comes to us from Minnesota, where he was a prosecutor in, Granite Falls?
He made the right move from Minnesota to North Dakota.
But a North Dakota boy originally.
As one of the gubernatorial candidates' billboard says in Minnesota, please don't let a North Dakota get another job.
Here
we did. We did our part for the Emmer campaign in Minnesota. I also might announce that the week of NARUC is such that I'm unable to be there to vote for Tony, so I'm hoping it doesn't lose by one vote. But I will be in Denver keynoting the Bakken Development Infrastructure Summit with a number of investment bankers and traditional lenders as well as pipeline companies. And it's a two-day summit aimed at discussion and cooperation and how to develop the export capacity further for the massive production in the Bakken. So I'll be down there representing
that. It's actually each state, I think, that gets a vote. So.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm confident of ours. Then, yeah. With that, are there any questions?
Just to follow up on the Cromer line, the reverse line. What is their timetable on that?
That's a good question. I hope I have it here. If I don't, I might have to
think as quickly as possible.
Yeah, as quickly as possible. I think they're hoping to start construction in the spring of 2011 and be completed by 2013 on these particular segments. In fact, here it is. Anticipate construction. They'd like to begin construction as soon as possible. Dependent upon commission approval, they anticipate commencing construction by June of 2011 and placing the completed project in service by January 1 of 2013.
And this basically will take another 148,000
yes,
plus
145,800
barrels basically off the roads, if you want to take it that way.
So. Well, kind of. Clearly without this, there aren't going to be 145,000 barrels of oil being trucked to Clearwater, Minnesota on highways. I mean, what it does do, it just opens up the capacity, the export capacity, that much more. The interesting thing about this Cromer to Berthold, or Berthold to Cromer, it used to be Cromer to Berthold. That it used to be a line that took Canadian crude down to the North Dakota Enbridge system and over to Clearwater, Minnesota. And now, instead, they'll be reversing it, and it'll now be filling up a Canadian line that runs from Cromer down to Clearwater. So it's taking Bakken into the Canadian line. It's an interesting sort of concept because it wasn't that many years ago that we received a lot of complaints. I mean, almost to the point of a formal complaint about the apportionment of Canadian crude in the North Dakota system. While the Bakken production was increasing so dramatically, there was great trepidation about the fact that the North Dakota line, you know, had a certain portion of it was allocated toward to Canadian crude. But just as sure as we've been increasing our export capacity, the Canadians have been increasing theirs as well. And by opening up a lot of pipelines, frankly, including the TransCanada Keystone line, which takes Alberta crude, as we know, to U.S. markets, it then opened up the opportunity for reversing this line and taking Bakken crude not only in the North Dakota system, but then up to the Canadian system and over. So it's an interesting time that we live in, and if we get to levels that are being predicted by some, like a million barrels per day production in the Bakken, it's going to require a lot of pipeline capacity. But I think we've done pretty well. I think that at this point, the export capacity is about equal to the production levels. But as we know, production levels are growing, and we want to make sure that our export capacity can grow accordingly, but also prudently.
Enbridge came in this last summer, Dave, and they kind of walked us through. The key to this was that transfer station at Berthold, if you will. We had the hearing on that, and that got all worked out. And that's kind of like the linchpin that all this pipeline development kind of follows through on. But their goal was, like Kevin said, to get this done as quickly as possible to get the trucks off the road, but the export capacity, they felt that was key.
So the MDU formal hearing on Monday here?
Yes.
Monday and Tuesday.
Just walk me through.
Unless we wrap it up on Monday.
Have they modified any proposals?
Or we go to Wednesday.
Have they modified any proposals about their rate increase at all?
Well, you know, we're all we read, of course, is the testimony. Their initial testimony was filed, you know, quite some time ago. The initial application. Since then, staff has filed their testimony, or the advocates have filed their testimony. And I don't think we've seen rebuttal testimony, at least pre-filed rebuttal, since. So,
of course, the application itself has changed because of the disposition of the Big Stone issue. Mm-hmm. So that was taken out of it. So I mean, there have been some changes like that, but.
So I'm looking for something to use Monday morning. So
yeah.
Just to kind of explain to me.
Well, one of the things you might be thinking about, Dave, is, you know, what we haven't seen is a settlement agreement or something like that, which has become somewhat of a tradition, I guess. And I don't know whether there's such a thing in the works or not. But at this point, we certainly anticipate hearing the case as presented in its application.
Basically, what happens at the hearing itself is a number of things. First of all, it's the utility company's opportunity to make its case before the commission on why it believes that it needs a rate adjustment. At the same time, you have our staff, who we've split. Some become advisors to us, some become advocates. The advocates put on a case of their own where they try to argue for, you know, whether all of these costs should be allowed or not, or if the commission should look at something a little bit differently. To advocate the public interest in the matter. At the same time, it's a public hearing, so it's the public's opportunity to come listen and provide testimony as well. We have a number of interveners to the case who have official standing to ask questions of other witnesses and put witnesses on the stand, but it's also an opportunity for the public generally, even if they're not an intervener, if they've got some bit of information that they want the commission to consider, to come in and give that information under sworn testimony. So it's all three of those things. It's the company's opportunity, the advocates and intervener's opportunity, but also the public's opportunity to give the commission all the information that they feel we need to make a decision.
I believe there are three interveners at this point.
Well, I think I'm looking forward to a good hearing because we've read the case, if you will, and we read our own staff comments, and there's some areas that there are going to be some good questions coming, I predict.
There are disagreements, let's put it that way.
What's the bottom line on what they're asking for right now? Do you remember?
It's been revised, as Tony said. I think it's somewhere around $14 million per year, I think, is the requested increase, between $14 and $15 million. Does that sound about right? Anybody want to disagree? 13.8 million. Okay, I knew it was somewhere around there.
Right.
I've read it often enough; I should know it by heart. But I've never read it. I've never read a economic case as thoroughly as I've read this one. I can tell you that.
May I follow up on that? Why,
sure.
Why were you so interested in this?
Well, one? I think partly because I'm better at it. You know, partly is you get better the more often you do it. Also, you know, we've had so many settlement agreements in the past, and quite frankly, they've become a little bit awkward in my view. And I've felt like in too many times I've felt that if it's not real, it's certainly been perceived that these things are getting settled pretty easily. And I frankly think that it's time to give it a lot more scrutiny. Also thinking about the upcoming legislative session and how we might approach that and make sure that we're as prepared, but more importantly that the people are represented with as much firepower as possible in these rate cases, because I anticipate they're going to be coming at us, you know, pretty fast and furious. And many times, quite honestly, I feel like the people are a bit outgunned by the utilities, and I think that's unfortunate. People need to have a sense of confidence that we have all of the tools that we need to have to hear these cases as thoroughly as possible, to review them with as much expertise and technical advantage as the utilities themselves have, so that the people are so that justice is done.
Well, Dave, I've only been in the commission 2 years, so I wasn't involved with the XL rate case, but I was through the Otter Tail one, and now we're going through MDU. But it seems like we're on a change almost of. Rate cases will be coming a lot more frequently, and we've got riders for this and riders for that, and we're doing this with MISO, and there's a cost. I mean, there's all these different variables that are now in a rate base, if you will, and I don't know that we've developed quite the best formula of how to capture those. Do we put everything into rates? Do we do riders? How do we do that? So as you go through these rate cases, you try to think about what's the right formula, what's the right structure you want to have to put the cost allocated the right way. And that's what this case is. I mean, all the cases now are very interesting, and it'll kind of shape the case, the structure for future cases, I think. And I do agree that I think we'll see these a lot more than every 10, 12 years. It wouldn't be uncommon to start seeing them every other year.
Well, the beauty of rate cases is they do give you the opportunity to look at a company's total picture. I mean, when a lot of the work that the commission does in the interim are you're just looking at one part of the utility's operation or one particular issue that's come up, or if it's a billing system issue that's come up, or a MISO tariff, like Brian said, that came. I mean, a rate case is the one opportunity to look at everything in the entirety and really try to set some precedent on a going forward basis for how the company is to be structured and interacts with its consumers and so on and so forth. So you've got everything at play all at once when you've got a rate case on the table.
You know, and one of the things that keep discussing this, I guess, but one of the things that's become an area of some concern for me is that there's the presumption of prudence on generation within the state. There's PCNNs that come at us rather regularly, and we treat them somewhat routinely. And then comes the recovery of the costs, and so much of the work that should have probably been done prior to a prudence determination or a PCNN comes to a rate case, and sometimes I think we get the cart before the horse a little bit. And so that's why, Dave, I mean, to answer your initial question, I've just, as this has gotten more complicated and I've gotten more experienced, it's just a lot more interesting to me to read a case thoroughly. All right, if there's nothing else, let's recess for a few minutes while we sign orders. We'll come back at about 10:45.